Welcome to the first Anthony Nolan Patient Experience Team podcast. My name is Billy and I am the Patient and Families Officer. Throughout this series of podcasts, we hope to bring you insight and support into the experience of having a bone marrow or stem cell transplant. We'll be looking at what life before, during and after transplant can be like and talking to health professionals for tips and advice. And patients who've been there themselves will be sharing their stories and personal experiences with you. We hope you find them helpful and informative. I'm joined today by Hayley Leonard, who is one of our Anthony Nolan specialist post-transplant nurses working at the Royal Marsden Hospital. Hayley now also works within the patient experience team at Anthony Nolan head office, 3 days a week, supporting our work with patients and their families. Today we're going to be looking at preparing for a bone marrow or stem cell transplant, what people can do for themselves pre-transplant to aid recovery, and what Hayley advises her patients. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome. Thank you for being our first guest on our first ever podcast.
Thank you for inviting me.
Can you first of all tell me a bit about how you came to be supporting transplant patients?
Yeah, sure. So I've worked with patients with blood cancers since I qualified in 2002. I initially worked in the ward looking after patients when they were having their induction chemotherapy, as well as patients who were having their transplants. I did that for about 8 years, and I worked my way up to senior staff nurse level. And then I was very fortunate to join the transplant team as a transplant coordinator. So that was that meant that I was more involved with preparing the patient for their transplant and the donor searches. This was a really, really, really good learning experience for me as I realised about how much goes into organising transplants and how essential it is that we adequately prepare the patients before they go ahead with their transplant. I also realised how much support they needed after the transplant. And so when the opportunity came about 18 months ago for an Anthony Nolan post-transplant clinical nurse specialist role.
You jumped at the chance.
I really had to apply, yes. And I was really very fortunate to be successful.
And we're very lucky to have you.
Thank you. So now my role is to provide information and support for patients and families in their post-transplant recovery. I do feel very lucky and that I've gained a lot of experience at working with patients at all phases of the transplant journey.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like you have a real picture, a much broader picture of where they've come and where they're going.
Yeah, I think so.
So what are patients' main concerns when they understand that a bone marrow transplant is going to be part of their treatment? And how do you help them to deal with that?
Well, it depends really. For some, they've always known that this is part of the plan. So while they've been in having their treatment, they're aware that they're heading towards having a transplant at some point. So those patients have had a bit more time to go away and have a read and really gaining understanding of the process and what's involved and get themselves ready for it. And then there are other patients who maybe the decision to have a transplant is a bit more of a shock and it all happens very quickly and they can feel a bit overwhelmed. For both, I think, two of the main initial concerns is finding a donor and the transplant procedure itself. Now, this is completely understandable because obviously if we don't find them a donor, then there is no transplant. And the transplant procedure often conjures up thoughts of surgery and operations, when in fact the procedure itself is very simple and it's just like having your medicine, you know, like when you have a drip or a blood transfusion.
Okay.
What I find the more difficult conversations are when we talk about recovery.
Okay.
I think because the focus is on finding a donor, not all patients consider what might happen after the transplant, or they think that the recovery will be very similar to when they just have their chemotherapy alone.
So they think it's hard for you to sort of talk to them. They might not realise that it might be a more long-term thing.
Exactly. That tends to be the main issue, is that they think within a few months after the transplant they're going to be back to normal when, you know, in fact it's going to take a little bit longer than that. So I always try and address this and prepare them for the, you know, for the post-transplant period. Now, this is a lot of information, and I think as a healthcare professional, we need to be sensitive to that, especially if they've only recently been told they need a transplant. We need to be aware that we're only giving people the right information at the right time. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it can get a bit overwhelming and muddled.
So when you are talking to patients and their families, what do you feel is important to communicate?
Well, this can be difficult because if I was to sit down and talk about everything that might happen, potentially might happen in, you know, next 6 months. Again, it'd be really overwhelming and also a little bit scary. So yeah. we don't tend to like to scare our patients too much. So we tend to focus on the main points like risks of infection, fatigue, nutrition, and of course, graft versus host disease. When talking about GVH, one of the main things I try and get across is that this is an expected side effect.
Yeah.
And, you know, can be seen as a good thing just as long as we can control it. Otherwise, after transplant, when it does happen, some patients can panic and think that this is a bad sign and something has gone wrong. I also think it's really important that we talk about the practical aspects of the pre-transplant workup. So they will have to have organ tests, so we need to look at their heart and kidneys and sometimes their lungs as well, just to make sure that they're functioning well. All of the patients will need an Hickman line put in, so we need to talk about the procedure of getting that inserted. And they will also need lots and lots of blood tests. So I think the practical side is also a very important area to address. And then we need to think about the psychological impact. So what I tend to do is try and sit down with the patients and have a conversation with them about how they think they've coped so far with treatment, you know, what their expectations are with the recovery and who their support network are. It's also really important to get to know who their main carer is going to be, you know, that person that's going to take them home once they're discharged. It's a huge responsibility for someone to look after a patient after transplant. And I often think, you know, the loved one that's doing it often feels very vulnerable. So I think to build up a relationship with them, have a good rapport with them, and for them to know that, you know, me or whoever the CNS is actually there for them at the other end of the line is really important. Plus, for them to know what to expect when they get home.
Yeah.
And I think finally, one of the important things to talk about is, you know, goals and expectations. I think it's really, really important that patients and their families have something to strive for. So it may be something like going back to work, which is often very important, or they might want to plan a holiday or attend a big family occasion like a wedding or something. So I try to spend some time with them talking about how we can try and achieve those goals. I'm always really supportive of trying to achieve them, but keeping it realistic as well. So we try and manage those expectations.
But that's a really nice thing to actually talk about something positive that they can work towards.
Exactly. And I think that's the point. It is positive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not talking about all the things we're not letting them do and all the things they can't do. We're talking about, right, this is what we're going to do now when you're better. Let's plan for that. And I think it gives them a focus.
Yeah.
And it gives them something to strive for.
Yeah. So you mentioned that there's an awful lot of information to take in when it comes to having a bone marrow or stem cell transplant. Do you find that some patients don't want to know all the information?
Oh no, definitely, that is the case. And we need to respect that. In some situations, the patients don't want to know anything, but the family members want to know everything.
Okay.
And again, we need to respect that as well. It's part of my job to ensure patients understand what treatments they're going to go into and the expected side effects, but we do have to balance that with not going into information overload. I always suggest that patients and the families don't try and take everything on board. I think it's almost impossible to try and understand everything all at once. I suggest taking it in stages and focusing on what's important to you at that time.
So looking at it in a more short term and in more manageable sections.
Exactly, like. Yeah. So you're completely right about it being manageable. So whether it be pre-transplant or during the transplant or post, you know, 6 months post-transplant, we focus on that time. And then hopefully it's not so daunting.
Mm-hmm.
I also suggest that all our patients use the 7-step booklet, so the 7 steps before and the next 7 steps for after the transplant. I think they're a great resource that you can dip in and out of, and you haven't got to read it all at once.
I know that a lot of patients are concerned about the search for a donor. So I wanted to ask, are patients communicated with regularly throughout the search for a donor? And how do you explain this complex process to them?
Yeah, I think they should be kept up to date. I know that when I was the transplant coordinator, I always tried to keep the patients informed of the progress. I think the hardest part of the search process is that uncertainty. You know, even if you have a patient with lots of potential donors, there are no guarantees. So we still need to contact the donors, ensure they're still willing to donate, organise a date, and then they have to pass a medical. Obviously, we are very successful at finding donors, even for the more rare tissue types, but trying to communicate this process can be hard because ultimately patients just want the reassurance
that we found a donor. They just want to know that there's a donor out there for
them. Absolutely, yeah. And also it can take several weeks. And while this is all going on in the background, the patients are receiving treatments most of the time. So that's also, you know, an added stress to them. They can't plan ahead. They can't, you know, plan for holidays or do anything nice. They have to be, we are very led by the donor's availability. So as much as I know we try and plan a transplant date well ahead of time, sometimes it is only made with a few weeks' notice. But I completely understand why this period is so difficult for the patients and their families.
So tell me, how can patients help themselves to prepare mentally and physically for their transplant? Do you have any tips or ways of managing that you share with your patients?
Well, obviously, having never been told I need a transplant, I have no idea how that must feel. But I can only imagine that one of the hardest things is that the hospital appointments, treatments take over your life. We tell you where to be, what to do, and all the things that you're no longer allowed to do.
So I guess there's this huge loss of control for patients, which must be a really difficult adjustment to make.
No, you know, exactly, I agree. So what I do try and do is spend a lot of time with patients and their families talking about how we can take their control back.
Okay.
So we talk about taking some responsibility for looking after their body and mind. And the two ways that I think they can do that is to take control of their fitness and diet. You know, take some responsibility for that. So they can say to themselves, I will make sure that I eat well. Mm-hmm. I will make sure that I keep moving. You know, trying to exercise before the transplant, if you can. I know most patients will be having treatment. So when I say exercise, it can be a 10-minute walk. Doesn't have to be running or, you know, running miles or a workout down the gym.
Yeah, because I know that some patients can be a bit overwhelmed by the word exercise. I guess it's because they're already coping with so much. But so you're suggesting that even some gentle movement can be really beneficial?
Yeah, absolutely. So anything really. So even things like gardening or, mm-hmm. you know, if you're into that, some housework, you know, that sort of thing. But just that movement and moving yourself, moving your muscles and to keep active is really important. We know from lots of research that exercise or any kind of physical activity reduces treatment-related fatigue post-transplant.
Mm-hmm.
So to include that as part of your life before the transplant will then make it easier to incorporate after the transplant. We know that exercise can help shorten your recovery period. So I can't really emphasize enough how important exercise or just moving, you know, is, not just before transplant, but also after. I often suggest to our patients that they look at the Anthony Nolan Guide to Managing Fatigue, as this is an excellent resource, and it's actually presented from the perspective of the patients, and a lot of advice in there is directly from the patients. So, you know, you can't really get any better advice than that.
So you also mentioned a little bit about eating. So what do you mean? Is there a strict diet before transplant, or is it just a matter of trying to keep up your appetite during your treatment?
Well, hopefully before the transplant you'll have some period of time where you won't be having any treatment, so mm-hmm. you won't have a neutropenic diet at that point. So use that period to try and enjoy the, you know, eat the foods that you enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really important. But try and put on a little bit of weight. It's inevitable that at some point you will lose weight in your recovery. So if you can manage to put on a little bit of weight before you start, then you've given yourself a little bit of leeway post-transplant. Eating can be a real problem for some. So I think to just bear that in mind as you're kind of leading up to the transplant is a good tip.
Yeah. And so then also you talked a bit about mentally preparing with the support from the people that might be around. Tell me a bit more about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's not just about thinking about things physically. I think we need to focus on, we also need to, you know, concentrate on the psychological impact of a transplant. So think about who your support will be afterwards. Will it be, you know, your spouse, your family members, friends, or probably all of them? But it will be a tough time. So, you know, you need to use the support, that support to help you through. And also be mindful that this isn't just going to affect you. It's going to affect your, you know, your loved ones, those people that live with you, people that care about you. So especially for the person that's going to be caring for you the most, make sure there's someone there for them as well.
Yeah.
So you all kind of look after each other. Think of things that already help you relax or things that you enjoy. So that could be something like massage therapy or art therapy, and you can see if you can organise this either through the hospital, if they offer it, or locally if you can. If you feel that you are struggling, or you know that you might struggle, remember that this is really normal, and a completely normal expected effect of the transplant. I would imagine that if you speak to anyone post transplant, at some point they felt it tough. They know they felt it's been a tough time, and so it's really important that you tell someone. That could be your consultant, a nurse, a GP, a family or a friend. But if you let someone know, then we can refer you for support early on. And then this can be used to support you throughout your recovery period.
Because I would imagine that if you did want to see like a mental health professional or something like that, there might be some wait time.
No, exactly. And that often is the case. So whether it be, like you say, a counsellor or a relaxation therapy or whatever it is you feel that will help, there is often some sort of waiting list. So if you feel that you are someone that's going to need support, or at some point you start feeling that, you know, you are struggling a bit, it's so much easier to just mention it early on. We can get the support for you early, and that's better than feeling low and having to wait. Mm-hmm. And also, if you do decide that when your appointment comes around that you don't need it, it's so much easier to cancel it. There's no commitment to it at all, so that's not a problem. And I think finally, you need to think about the practical things, so things like finance, work, university. Don't put this off until after the transplant when you might not feel up to it. You'll be off work for at least 6 months, so you need to plan for that. You can speak to your employer, university, get a fit note from your nurse or doctor, or even ask your nurse to speak to the HR department if you think that's necessary. The Macmillan or Anthony Nolan offer grants, so if you think that you're going to benefit from that, then you can make you can do an application. But again, applying for some of these benefits can take time. So to do it now, so it's all organised for when you're recovering, and you then don't have to worry too much about it afterwards. You can always speak to a CNS, a welfare officer, or citizens' advice if you're not sure what you're entitled to, or you need help filling in the forms.
And as you mentioned, you know, people going through the transplant, they have others that support them. So maybe a friend or a family member could also help with the forms. But it sounds like it's just really a good idea to be prepared, as you don't know what's going to come post-transplant.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And then you can focus on you, mm-hmm. and you can focus on all the things we talked about, you know, the diet and the exercise and looking after yourself mentally. You know, you can focus on that without having to worry about those other things. You know, they can all be in place and ready to go.
What do you enjoy about your job?
Well, I genuinely feel very lucky to have a job that I love. I honestly never get up for work and dread the thought of going in. I've always enjoyed getting to know the patients and their families, building up relationships with them and supporting them through their transplant journey. When I was a student nurse, that was one of the main things that attracted me to oncology, was that whole idea of being with someone throughout their cancer journey. And I'm very lucky that now within my job I can do that. Mm-hmm. Obviously this is a very, very serious subject and an anxious time, but I also think it's really important to smile and laugh and lighten the mood a bit, and hopefully I'm quite good at managing that with most of the patients. I meet some very inspiring people and I feel very, very privileged for that. It may sound like a bit of a cliche, but you realise that you should be grateful for the lives that you have, and often that thing you were stressing about really wasn't worth stressing about at all, and I think I owe it to the patients to think like that.
So tell me about when you find it difficult, as I'm sure it can be difficult at times. How do you take care of yourself?
Well, obviously, it's great to build good relationships with patients. But the flip side to that is that when things are not going well or patients are really struggling, then it can be tough for us too. I think it's a natural instinct for most nurses to want to fix people or situations. And sometimes we can't. And I know that I really struggle with that. It only really comes with experience. But you learn that when you go home, you have to try and switch off. Now that doesn't always work, and there will always be that patient that you think about over the weekend, but you do have to try, otherwise it will start to affect your family life and your health, and then you're no use to anyone really. I have a very busy life outside of work. I have a 9-year-old son and a very lively boxer dog who both keep me on my toes, and I have a really, really good family and great friends, and who I always, you know, I manage to see on a regular basis. I also have an allotment that seems to need weeding every other day, but I also go down there quite a lot on my own, and that's a bit of time out for me and a bit of space. And I find that quite therapeutic, actually.
Just to get a bit of headspace away from it all.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So my final question today is: if money were no object, what additional support would you like to see transplant recipients receiving?
I think that's a really good question, and the two main things that immediately spring to mind are that I think every transplant centre should have a post-transplant CNS. I think in the last 18 months, having been in this role, the feedback from the patients and the families have all been very, very positive. And I really do think it's made a difference to the transplant service as a whole, really. Mm-hmm. And I know that from our other two Anthony Nolan nurses, they too have had very, very positive feedback. I think the patients need a dedicated key worker throughout their recovery. I also think that they need a psychologist. So someone that is based within the transplant team, whose role is to be dedicated to the patients and their families pre and post transplant. We spend a lot of time talking about how hard it is on the recovery, so it seems only obvious to me.
Makes sense, exactly,
that you need someone who is a counsellor who is trained, who can spend time with those patients and their families and help them through that very difficult period.
Yeah, and I've spoken to lots of patients who have echoed those things, especially the tailored psychological support for patients and families. It seems to be an area that needs some investing in.
Yeah.
Thank you for speaking with us today, Hayley. I think what we've talked about will be really helpful for patients. And thank you for listening to our first podcast. If you found it useful, please share it on Facebook and Twitter and let us know what future topics you'd like to hear discussed. You can contact us at patientinfo@antonynolan.org with your ideas. And you can also speak to a member of the patient experience team at this address if you need some support or have questions, anytime. We also have an online transplant community that you can join on our website, which allows patients and family members to speak to each other and get advice from transplant recipients who have been through the process. This can be really helpful for pre-transplant questions. For more information on stem cell transplant and recovery, as well as free resources that you can download and order, you can visit our website, antonynolan.org, and take a look at our patient pages.